in welcoming Sharon C. from the Pacific Group of West Los Angeles, California.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Sharon, alcoholic. So nice to be here. You took my notes. That's teasing. A lot of people I love in this room, and I my heart is full because just, and I met two of the new girls tonight studying in their little books. It was great, and Paige has already passed all the forward and everything. I remember I could hardly read three pages a night when I was new. It put me to sleep. The big book actually helped me sleep, and sleeping was something I hadn't done in a long time. I just, if I was still standing and not passed out, I wasn't done yet. That's the kind of drinker I am. And much of the time I didn't know that I was done, but because I was walking around in a blackout, but I'm just that kind of drinker, and I'm glad, thank you for lowering the lights. I'm not a bright light kind of person. I like those dark bars. One of my favorite bars in the French Quarter was the Bastille, which we painted the windows black, so not an ounce of sunlight could get in that bar. And it's one of those places that had a great jukebox, and I got 86 from there. It was hard to do, but I managed to, and I came in to pay my tab. I was leaving town again looking for, you know, the grass is greener. I came day A to find out why. It's because the other guy took care of his lawn. Okay, you know. I always wonder what you had because you took care of your stuff. But I came in to pay my tab, and I was leaving town, and Billy told me to get out. And I said, why? And he said, you're 86. I said, why? You have a tab at my bar. I have a tab at your bar. I'm going to pay. I'm paying money. And he said, you know, stay at the door, look at the ceiling fan. And I looked at the ceiling fan, and it was broken. And he said, do you remember? And I said, no. And he said, you were dancing on the bar, and your hair got caught in the ceiling fan. And and I guess I remember having a bald spot, you know, but just kind of thinking it was a good time. Must have had a good time last night. You know, I hurt for a while, but that wasn't what made the owner mad, because Billy said you kind of whipped around and you broke some of the good bottles, not the well whiskey. I broke the, you know, the Smirnoff and the Bacardi and the good stuff. And so that's what made the owner mad. Didn't care I broke the fan, but I broke the good bottles. Those are the kind of drinkers I hung out with. You can get 86 out of someone's life for the good bottles. So that was just a little bit about how I drank. And if the sunlight would hit me, I would just stay in the bar for 2 days. I just didn't want to go out. And I know that, you know, it's not a lot of sunlight here this weekend, but you guys are a ray of sunlight in my life. Most of you that I know, I've gotten a chance to see in the world and in Alcoholics Anonymous and get to know and love. And that just warms my heart. I mean, I think all we really have to do to lead a spiritual life is to brighten the corner where we live. So you guys definitely are brightening this corner up here. So my heart is full, and thank you very much. If you guys, there's some new people I know. I'm really glad to see you here. I just want your attention for a second, and then you can go back to thinking about your favorite subject. I want you to make your feet your friend. I want you to look at those feet, love those feet, rub those feet, manicure those feet, take care of those feet, because the feet are what are going to get you to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Your feet will take you to your sponsor's house. Your feet will walk you past the liquor store. Your head will not tell you. Your head will not be your friend for a long time. You're new, you know. It's a squirrel cage up there. It's a mess up there. It's going to take a while to sort out. So don't listen to your head. I hope you get a sponsor louder than your head, and you take care of your feet. Take care of your feet. Okay, now you can go back to thinking about you. Just wanted your attention for 5 seconds. That's it. That's now the rest of the talk you can just snooze. But so I when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no idea that I was going to have a brand new life. And I want to wish everybody who had chips tonight a happy congratulations. And you know, I'm 31 and a half years sober in 20 days, and it's a day at a time. It's a day at a time, and I'm amazed that I've been here that long. But I think about back to that precious, amazing gifted day, August 20th, 1975, that I got the opportunity to come to you, and I didn't even know you were here. I didn't even know Alcoholics Anonymous was going to be my solution in life. We live in a time and space where there's Alcoholics Anonymous almost everywhere. And we are so lucky to live in this time and space where, you know, I don't like this meeting, go start your own. Or, you know, you can go down the block to another meeting. There's meetings everywhere. And we are so, so lucky to have found the solution to our disease, because alcoholics will die tonight that will never, ever have the privilege of hearing Chapter 5 read. Sit in a room and just hear the music of Chapter 5 read. Every time I hear that, I take a deep breath. I go, oh, yeah, that's right. There's a solution. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm going to be okay. Because I'm an alcoholic of that nature. I need to come back. I need to rub shoulders with it. I need to work with others. I need to be in the middle of it, because I never, ever want to forget what alcohol did for me. I never want to forget where alcoholism took me. I never want to forget that moment of precious surrender that I didn't even know I was having, that I got the gift to walk into an AA meeting. So if you've had that day and you have a sobriety day, you don't have to go get another one. It's a precious, amazing moment that, as an alcoholic, you get to know the solution, Alcoholics Anonymous. And Alcoholics Anonymous is not really growing. It's not bursting forth like it was. And I wonder, why aren't we out there? You know, they're swimming by. It's like fly fishing. You don't catch a whole lot. You guys fly fish up here, and a whole bunch swim by, and maybe you snag one. So if you've been snagged or you can snag one, you're saving a life. You're saving a life, yours and somebody else's. It's about saving lives here. It's about those 10 people that are sleeping a little bit more calmly, sleeping a little bit more soundly, able to sink into their bed, that mother that's worried about you for years, that you're sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight. It is not about you. And I think of that. I think, God, it is so not about me being sober, that I am so blessed and my heart is so full, that I am a link in the chain, and my job is to keep my link nice and shiny and strong, my link, my side of the street. And I work at that, and I'm so happy that I know that, because it makes me feel empowered. It makes me feel part of you. It makes me feel part of the world. And I never felt that, unless, of course, I had, you know, a bottle of tequila and, you know, my favorite songs on the jukebox going and my new hymn next to me. That was a feeling of empowerment. I was looking for that spiritual connection, you know, And the spirits of alcohol allowed me to have that spiritual connection. Alcohol did for me what I work at every day of my life, is that spiritual connection with my God. I have been so wonderfully and beautifully in the center of the world, sober, so much feet planted, head in the clouds, seeking, having a great time, so much more than I ever had when I was out there having a good time. And I had a good time. I had a great time. It was the 60s. You know, it wasn't just say no, it was just say thanks. You know, we were seeking all over the place, I'll tell you. And we found truth a lot. It just would melt before we could write it down or, you know, catch it as it went by. But, you know, I hitchhiked. I went to college. I tried a lot of different things. It was an exciting time to be alive, and it was, you know, power to the people, and it was, you know, screw my parents' life. And I'm the only alcoholic. I've got three other siblings that are straight and narrow. Straight and narrow. Parents, straight and narrow. I don't know where I came from, but I was always a little different. I was the one that I was obsessed with Gandhi. I liked, I grew up in Iowa. It's a little hard to be obsessed with Gandhi when you're in the breadbasket of the world, and nobody wants you to starve yourself there. They just don't get it. Eat your potatoes. Shut up, you know. I liked the Lost Weekend. That was one of my favorite movies when I was a little girl, with Ray Milland, and he was this alcoholic that had lost this weekend, and I loved that movie. I was looking for the mothership as a little girl. I knew they left me off in Iowa. They shouldn't have done that. So I was never quite in my skin, but I was having a good time. I mean, life growing up in Iowa was fine. It was fun. We started drinking early. It just did something for me. It allowed me to, move the 38D woman off the hood of the car and kind of slide on over and take her place and let my little training bra do its thing, you know. And it empowered me. It allowed me to feel tip of my head, the tip of my toes, like I've arrived. It was really very empowering, alcohol, and I managed to keep the party going, find the party, find the alcohol, and nobody really knew that I was doing that until I started to get in some trouble. And once I started to get into some trouble, I lied my way out of it, of course. I tried to be the nice little Catholic girl. It just didn't work. I discovered boys, and so I started lying in confessional. You know, I started lying. I lied to my parents. I lied in the confessional. I started lying to the teachers. I started skipping school. You know, I could have been anything I wanted to be growing up. I went to the White House when I was 16 years old as a young citizen of America, and I was one of the 100 young citizens picked from all over the country to go and, you know, meet the Lucy Bird and Lady Bird and all those guys. And I was drunk, and I had found my notes about 5 years ago that I was drunk at the White House, and I was thinking I have to better be careful about my drinking. I mean, I had met some boys, and we were drinking, and then I had to go to this tea, and I was drunk. And I was worried about that, and it was my secret at 16 years old. In my late teens, then I went to the White House for other reasons. They didn't let me in because, you know, we were loud and making noise and carrying signs and putting soap suds in the fountain and waving at the FBI building. And, you know, I could never get that peace sign right. You know, I was always, no, they want two fingers. No, I like the one finger. I started to get upset with what was going on in the world because I was upset with myself. I didn't like my life. I had been cheated on by the man I was going to marry. My dad and I were not seeing eye to eye. I went to try to talk to this priest. We had a huge fight. I had him coming at me, and people were in the church, and I said, see, look at you, hypocrite. And I was really good at goading you on and letting you show your true self and then pointing it out. And, you know, I tried to take art classes. Pretty soon, as I went down the path of my drinking, I had to pay with something. You know, you pay as you go down the path of alcoholism. You pay with things like dignity. Bartender says, give your dignity tonight. If you want to keep drinking, sure, take my dignity. Take it. Who dignity? Can't even spell it when I'm drunk. Take it, you know. You got to pay with your art talent now. You're not going to paint another picture for years and years and years. You want that? Sure, take my art talent. You know, go ahead. Take everything I have. I want King Alcohol in my life. Whatever you need down this path, you can just have it. I want alcohol in my life. And I was really upset with God, my father. My father should have been able to fix it, even though he got close to me and I would let him see what was going on with me. And then I would back him off with too much truth, things dads shouldn't know about their little girls. I broke his heart, and I had to pay with that. I had to pay with the love of my father. But alcohol, it allowed me to look ahead. It allowed me to see the grass was greener. I always took me with me, and we caught up to me faster. I couldn't quite figure that out, but I did a lot of geographics. And you know, when I did come to AA and I heard Norm Alpe say the reason the grass was greener was because the other guy took care of his lawn, it was like, bingo. God, I've been waiting for that piece of truth my whole life. And he said, if you're new, we know what you're made of. And I thought, what am I made of? You know, this is a night for truth here in this meeting. And he said, fertilizer. And I thought, Norm said I made a fertilizer. That's good, you know. It felt like good stuff. And he said, well, we're going to make a good lawn with that fertilizer. Ah, ha, 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 you know. And it's like, oh, good, I'm going to make a good lawn with my crap, you know. It's like, you know, there was hope in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. These old-timers, they don't give you truth without slamming some hope at you, which is good, you know. But I was always looking for something. And, you know, from New York back to Iowa, back to college, couldn't paint. Colorado, met Bob Dylan, came to California. And, well, I think it was Bob. It was the late 60s, could have been him. You know, came to California, kicked out of a commune. I'm out there with my thumb out again, dog at my heels. I drank their bong wine. They did not drink like I drank. And, oh, you've done it? I know you have. You can see by the look on your face. Yes, she's done it right up here, this new girl. Yes, I think you belong here. And I ended up back at mom and dad's at 21, and I can't sit down and have breakfast with my father because there's too much pain between me and dad. And my dad, 7/8 check. I love my dad. I wanted my dad's attention. I wanted something special. My older sister's the Mensa. Nurse Sally got a nurse kit when she was 4 for Christmas, wanted to be a nurse and grow up and move to Alaska, and that's what she still is. You know, at 4, she knew her life path. And then my brother, who carried the family name, and then me. So since my dad was Czech, I decided I'm going to play the accordion. You know, it wasn't cool then, not cool now. So believe me, I took a big risk with that one. But, you know, I wanted my dad's attention so much, and I wanted his love. And he loved that I played that accordion. He loved that I would sit there on the hay bales in that small town in Iowa. They're having some, I don't know, sauerkraut days or something. And we're going down the wagons, you know, and the hay wagons with a float, you know, with the Boddicure accordion band on here. And I'm in my red cotton pique dress and this titano beautiful mother of pearl black and white huge accordion on my lap. And there's my dad, and, you know, Mrs. Boddicure's up there directing us with her high heels. I don't know how she did the high heels in that hay wagon, but anyway, she was leading us, and I'm playing hard. I'm pulling those bellows, and my dad's smiling at me, and I'm thinking, yeah, right, Dad. You know, and I wanted my dad. It's love. I wanted to do something special for him, and now we can't share a piece of toast. We can't ride in the car together to go to Grandma's house on Thanksgiving because there's too much pain between me and Dad. We don't lock eyes anymore. We don't have conversations anymore. I stay out of his way. He stays out of my way. So I had paid with the love of my father. That was something that I had already paid with by the time I was 21 years old. I started to get physically ill, and things, you know, my gallbladder was bad, my pancreas was bad. I tried organic living for a while, but I don't know, I just smoke in this stuff and I get thirsty, you know. It's like, ugh, you know, when are we going to have something to drink? And they'd be playing their banjos and I'd play the spoons. I learned to play the spoons just to get along with these people. And, you know, Pete Seeger over and over again. And, you know, by the time I go get some cheap wine, I start kicking the banjo, and me and the dog, you know, I get my cowboy boots off. I slobber at all of them. They all go off to bed because they don't like me drinking because I drink different. I act different when I drink. Can't you just smoke these things? Why do you have to act like that? Screw off. You know, I'm going to kick your banjo when you go out of the room, you know. And that didn't work for me either. But, you know, I tried a lot of different things to try to fit in somewhere. But I'm selfish and self-centered, and alcoholism makes your world smaller. It was all about me, and I didn't know that. I didn't know how selfish and self-centered. When you say to your mother, because you've joined the carnival, that's a whole other thing. You're supposed to be in Wisconsin, and you're in Arkansas with Matt Armstrong shows running a shooting gallery. Oh, hi, Mom. You know, it's when you say to your mother, I'm not hurting anyone but me. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. I don't want to hear it. Quit crying. I'm not hurting anyone but me, Mom. Come on. What? That's pretty selfish. That's pretty narrow. That's not being in the world of being a daughter. So, you know, when you say something like that, and I don't hear myself say that, I justify it. I am angry and I justify it. And when I drink my tequila, I don't need anyone. You know, maybe the dog will make it, maybe the dog won't make it. You know, I had a lot of animals bite the dust around me. I felt really bad about that. I was always burying something in the middle of the night. My one dog got killed in Biloxi, Mississippi on the 4th of July. Me and the carnival guy, my new him, he had a pet skunk named Crank, so, you know, it was one of those relationships. And I didn't understand him, he didn't understand me, but we got busted and we got thrown in jail together. We're convicted felons from the state of Louisiana, and it was just insane, and the carnival left town, and nobody's leaving. For 2 years, you leave first. No, you leave first. You know, we just hated each other, but we stayed together, kind of. And it was craziness, and we were having another one of those fights, you know, black eyes, knife fights, craziness. I thought it was love by then. That's what it took for me to have some feeling, was drama. Craziness, violence, and my dog sees something happening, and so she's running across the road to try to help me, and, you know, pickup truck right there in Biloxi. And I was like, I couldn't believe that another one of my dogs, this is one of my favorite dogs, had, you know. I sat there in the Holiday Inn with this dead dog on my lap on the 4th of July and wouldn't move. They kept saying, lady, you got to leave, you know, lady, the dog is dead. I said, no, it's not. It's going to get up. And finally they called the police to ask me to leave because I couldn't believe it. So then we drive back to New Orleans and I'm trying to bury this dog in City Park at 3 in the morning. And, you know, I mean, it's wet down there. It's wet up here, but it's wet down there. So you go a little bit below the surface and you hit water. You know, I'm trying to find a grave for this dog and I'm trying to just something. And, you know, we're in Jackson Square with a spoon and a hangover trying to bury that turtle, you know, that got stuck in my powder as it was walking through one night, I guess. I don't know. I came to and it was stiff, you know, and but it had a little smile, you know. And I took the other turtle to the pet store and said, please take Scamp, Tramp died. And they said, okay, we'll take Scamp, you know. And it was always something. And I just had, I mean, those things hurt. Those things really hurt. And I just had to go have another drink. Where's the mouse? Let me go to the mouse trap. You know, I can play for the good times on that jukebox over. And I'll drink some gin and I'll cry. I'll cry in your beer. I'll cry on you. And then you'll say something to me and I'll get mad and I'll kick you. You know, I just... just didn't know what you were going to get with me. And my mom and dad had to go to Texas, and they thought they'd come by the French Quarter to see me if they could find me, and they did find me. And they found me with the skunk man and the skunk droppings in this filthy apartment with, you know, sheets. Nobody did sheets. Nobody did laundry. You just throw things away and get new things. You know, you started cooking those red beans a week ago, and now you can't lift the lid because it moves, so you just throw it away, you know, just throw it away. And who's going to paper train the skunk? You know, and it just craziness. And there was a snake, and so this guy put the snake, and my dad wouldn't come in. My dad stood by the door. My mother came in. And I remember that day because I remember thinking, I am so tired living this life. And I just want to go crawl in the back of their car and lay down and wrap my mommy's sweater around me and go home to Iowa and start all over. But I knew I couldn't do that. I couldn't. That life was over for me. And being part of that family I saw that day was over for me. And the amazing thing about making amends and the amazing thing about this spiritual path that we have is that you get to see, you really get to see at a deep gut level the pain you caused other people. And I used to think making amends was about, oh, okay, it's all about the forgiveness, and it's about I'm going to be okay now, and don't worry about me. It's not about me at all. Making amends is about them. Making amends is, my brother and sister were at that seedy apartment. I didn't even remember it. I was in and out of a blackout that day, I guess. And about 5 years ago, they started talking about that visit. And I went, how do you guys know about that? My brother and sister. My younger sister and my brother. And they said, we were there. And I said, no, you weren't. And they said, we were there. It was like, oh my God, they were there. They were there. My brother said, he was little, and he said, all I could do was keep my hands in my pocket. My fists were balled up because I wanted to hurt that guy that was hurting my favorite older sister. But he was too big. I couldn't do anything. And my sister said, yeah, we went out. We thought we were going to go get some sandwiches. And he took me to this girly show where somebody, the curtain opened, and this girl danced behind the mirror, the window or something. And she was underage. She was young. And I was like horrified. I didn't even know. And I thought about, oh my God, all the times I was in a blackout, all those years of drinking, what do I not remember? A whole lot. A whole lot. I'm sure there's people that I'll never ever get to face and say, what can I do? I'm so sorry. I need to do something for you. Let me make your life better. I will never know the situation of the person. So my job, when I saw it at 7 years of sobriety, page 77, that I am to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. I need to, every single day of my life, fit myself to be of service to the world, whoever needs it, whoever needs it, because I'll never be able to make those direct amends for things I don't remember or don't know. And so every single day I get to go out in the world, keep my eyes open to see what I can do to make the world a better place. Step in and not judge it. Just be aware and alert. And if somebody needs something, something needs to be done, I need to do it, and I need to not complain about it and not make myself important. I need to make them important. And that's what I've been able to do once I kind of got all that, when I realized, wow, you know, I was definitely not part of the force for good out there. I was dark. I was a taker. I was self-absorbed and selfish. And if you got around me, it wasn't going to be pretty. And the beauty of coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, that we get to live long enough to come and sit here, whether you drank at home in your bedroom or you're out in the road, doesn't matter. You know, things get us like the ends of coffee tables. We pass out, you know, and it gets our temple. Stupid ways. I mean, we die and we choke on our own vomit. We stupid things, not anything dramatic. Or we take somebody out in a car, which is sad. That we are lucky enough to be here, that we have a way of life, that we get to go and make right in the world, is so complete. It's so beautiful, this program. I get so emotional and touched that these, you know, a proctologist and a retired stock, or a very, not very good stockbroker, gets together and they make this whole thing happen. And my job is to not water it down. My job is to give exactly what's been given to me exactly onto the next person, because I don't know if my son or his kids or your kids or somebody's going to need Alcoholics Anonymous in 20, 30, 40 years. I would hope they could find one alcoholic talking to the other alcoholic when they walk in the rooms. And that's something that maybe kind of sounded like AA all those years ago, because this works for us. It's the only thing in all the years since the grape has been crushed that works for alcoholics. And the thing that was missing was one alcoholic talking to another, the language of the heart. Aren't we the lucky ones? We used to come in here, we just die to come in here, you know, and fight all the way. But we get to be here. We're here. We get to be here. We get a brand new life handed to you. You have to do the work, but the life is handed. And many people go, too much work, leave it on the seat, walk out, we never see them again. Now, we're the lucky ones, absolutely. You know, 1975 was the year I came to you, and I had no idea that I was done or going to be done or on my way to being done. I had no idea there was Alcoholics Anonymous until I was at a bar in West Hollywood, and this girl was really drunk. It was called Barney's Beanery. It's now a tourist spot. My son the other day, I called him. Well, it was about 6 months ago. I said, "Where are you?" He said, "I'm at Barney's Beanery." I said, "What? That's my old hangout. You're what?" He said, yeah, they go there for the food. Hello. I mean, it's strange to me. It's just weird to have him tell me he was there. He's of age, but it was just odd. But we were in the bar, we were drinking, and this girl was really drunk, and she had to go to her A&A meeting. Never heard of it before. And we gave her a toast as she went out the door, and they called her a taxi because she was too drunk to drive. So what do I know? Good for you, Chris. Go to A&A. Whatever. And she was going to be my Eskimo. That was April, August of that year, and I had no idea. And that girl, I don't know how many people she had the chance to bring in Alcoholics Anonymous or to help, but she's not with us today. She died when I was a couple of years sober. She was a pretty, artistic, light-up-the room kind of girl, and she died at St. John's Hospital, an old woman at 31. So you just never know, but I heard this Alcoholics Anonymous, and I guess somewhere it must have stuck in the back of my brain. I have no idea. I had become unemployable. I went back to the French Quarter. I had become unemployable. Nobody wanted me to work anymore. I was over 170 pounds. I was toxic. I was bloated. I wore a red dashiki, a Panama hat. I hadn't combed my hair in a while. I don't remember. I remember when water started to hurt. So, you know, I remember that. Maybe I get hired for a night cocktail waitressing, then they'd ask me to not come back and pay me for the night. I had a book called Be Here Now by Baba Ram Dass in my backpack because I didn't know anything about being here now, but I'm carrying it around for years, you know. And I just slept wherever. I slept in a hallway. I slept in your apartment. I slept, you know, in an alley. It didn't matter. My parents didn't know where I was from that portion. And I don't remember much between April and August. I do know I was on the road, because I did that. I hitchhiked a lot of places. I got in cars and went places with people. And July, I was back going to Hawaii, but I had scared off my new friend with DTs in Texas because I didn't have enough fresh alcohol and woke up having these horrible DTs. And so when we hit California, he left $50 on the bar, and I never saw him again, and I never made Hawaii. We were on our way, but I made California once again, and I didn't like California because they closed the bars, and I didn't like having to be prepared. I like to go to a bar at 3, 4, 5 in the morning. I didn't like that they closed, and I didn't like I had to be prepared. And if I wasn't, it made me extremely nervous, and I had to do things to get alcohol late at night. But I went on a little excursion on some motorcycles to Palm Springs, and I thought we were going to have a good time, and they just wanted weight on the back tire because it was windy going through the desert. So they looked at... I looked down the bar stool and I saw, you know, there's Chubby, put her on the back. And so I was left somewhere, and they went off and they didn't want to party with me. And I don't remember much. I don't really remember much about that evening, but I do remember I came to somewhere, and I came to and I realized that I was really being hurt, and this wasn't, delirium tremors, that I was actually really being kicked. I was actually really being beaten up, and I had a broken jaw in three places, and my nose had been broken, and I had been drug around on the cement because there were two slight guys, and I was pretty big, dead weight by that time. I had a concussion, and I was a mess, and they rolled me off the side of the road, basically just to leave me there. And it was Palm Springs. It was a desert. It was July. It was hot. I had a concussion. I was laying down in the sand. I woke up, I came to, and I heard the car door slam because there's a survivor deep inside each one of us. Each inside, there's that deep, that great fact deep down within was still an ember. It wasn't firing up, but it was an ember. And that little ember said, get up, I want to live. And I did. And I guess I found someone's lawn chair and by a pool, and a gardener found me and called an ambulance and called the police. And I was in the hospital. And I was a victim of violent crime, and they were all there, and I didn't remember much about what happened. And I got some cards from some of my friends in New Orleans, but I didn't get any airline tickets this time. And I didn't get any money this time. So I was just kind of there. And a guy that I had known from Barney's Beanery heard what had happened to me and said that I could stay with him for a while because I had nowhere to go. So he drove me back to Los Angeles. And if I had to go back to court or it had become a court case, he drove me back, and he would just drop me off, and I would have to sit in court with my jaw wired shut and my nose off to the side, and I couldn't even look up at you. I couldn't touch my face for 6 months. It hurt so bad. And August 20th, he said to me, you have to leave. You're depressing me. I was like, oh, God. I was so tired. And he would buy me red wine and go off to work, and I would stick a straw through the wires on the mouth where the tooth had been and suck on that red wine because I'm a drinker. There's no more, all right, let's go to Vancouver. There was no more of that excitement of drinking and power and, you know, that feeling of omnipotence that alcohol would give me. It was gone. That part of it was gone. I was drinking because I'm a drinker. That's all. And he said to me that morning, you gotta go somewhere else. You're depressing me. I was like, I have nowhere to go. But I called my mother and my mom in Iowa, and I said, I couldn't talk because 3 months in AA, actually, I was wired shut. I couldn't talk. I had learned to listen. It was a blessing in disguise. But so my mother gets this call from me with this kind of muffled talk, and she says, Sharon, I can't help you anymore. Go to the Salvation Army. And Mom would have, at that moment, that's the day I came to you. If that moment Mom would have said, I'll send you $20, please don't call home, you break our hearts. This is it, no more. You'd have another speaker. And I called the phone number that was sitting there, and it's a girl that Chris, the one who was drunk going to our AA meeting that we gave the toast to. Her number was there because she was dating the guy I was staying with. And I called her, and she recognized alcoholism because she'd been in and out, in and out, in and out. She knew maybe this AA stuff could help you because I think you have a problem. She didn't say that to me. She just said, I can't help you, because she was drinking that day. She said, call Suzanne, and made me call a stranger, which I don't do. I don't call strangers and ask for help. See, that was, I was really pretty done to do something like that. And this woman who could hardly understand me on the phone knew where the Duck Pond liquor store was, because that's where I lived, upstairs, because every alcoholic knew that liquor store. They sold after hours out the back. They sold, you know, they took bad checks. They were a great liquor store. So all she could understand was Duck Pond, you know, and she knew exactly. She told me where to sit. She told me what steps to wait on. And she said, put your drink down and put your joint down, too. And I thought, how does she know I have both? It's like, she's just like, got my attention. And that's how I got to you. That's how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think about maybe the day before I was a little feisty and I would have gone, I'm not calling some stranger, Chris, you're crazy, you know. Or maybe the day after I would have had a plan. I would have felt better. But that day, I got to come to you. So it's a precious, perfect day. And the amazing part of that is that I had no idea that I was going to get a brand new life. If you were going to tell me that day on the phone, you're going to get a brand new life. I said, screw life, I want out of here. I didn't care. I put myself in situations where it could have been lights out easily. I didn't care anymore. I wanted to die at 25 and be a good, you know, good-looking corpse, which that was gone. You know, the good-looking corpse part was gone. But that's what I was shooting for, and I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous, where this little ember of life that came in this meeting, they said things to me like, you look tired. I was like, how do they know I'm tired? You know, some man came over and said, take off your pack and stay with us for 30 days. You look tired, kid. And then he walked away and he came back and Suzanne, you'll remember, Susan Chuck Nesbitt. In fact, I think he was your sponsor, Chris. And he came back and he said, you look really tired. Why don't you stay with us 90 days? I thought, well, okay, I'm invited for longer, whatever it means. You know, he just invited me for longer. And the speaker said, all I remember is this guy saying he waited for the spaceship to land and say, you can come home now, Bill. Spaceship guy. Threw a little kindling on that ember. You know, it was like for a moment there. That identification, the power of identification. Because I didn't know I was sitting with my people. I didn't know that you guys knew. I mean, when you started kind of waking up and people are telling your secrets from the podium, they call it reading your mail. It's like, how do they know? They're talking to me. They're looking at me. Who told them? You know, it's that paranoia followed me in here too. So, but my day with you was... A man named Maurice came over and gave me a big book, and I gave him a quarter because he wouldn't shut up about payment terms. You know, it was on and on and on about these payment terms, and I hadn't been I've been without a drink now for about 8 hours, so I was like, wah 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 wah, you know, and I didn't like him near me because he was really intense, you know. So I gave him a quarter, and he went away, and I made a little note, came back, and wrote in my big book, Echo Park, Los Angeles, California, August 20th, 1975, in pencil. In pencil. I still have that book in pencil. It's beautiful, because Maurice isn't with us anymore. Chuck's not with us anymore. Many of the people that touched my heart and soul aren't with us anymore. And I honor them. I stand on the shoulders of giants. I absolutely do. I absolutely do. There was a guy named Jimmy Ryan. He was a... Texas, and well, he was Chicago Irish, but he ended up with a Texas accent because he drank down there. And he used to look at me and he'd go, willingness without action is fantasy. And I thought, oh God, he's talking right to me, because, you know, I'm willing, but I take no action on it. I sit around, you know, I made, you know, I got degrees sitting on bar stools, you know. I was so willing to learn and help the world, but it was all on bar stools. I didn't take any action. And, you know, people like Norm, you know, we talk about seconds and inches. It's like, oh, I know what he means, seconds and inches. Just by seconds and inches we get to be here. Oh, I know exactly what he means. And some of the greats, Chuck, you know, Chuck C. You don't see till you see, you don't hear till you hear. Ha, 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 ha. And I go, what? Everybody loves this guy right over my head, you know. He laughs like my grandfather. He looks like my grandfather. So I'd listen, you know. But he was like too ethereal for me. Until he would talk about the penny in front of the eye, and then I got that. He said, take a penny and put it in front of your eye. Clouds out half your vision. This is what obsession is, he would talk about. And he said, and Alcoholics Anonymous was good sponsorship. We just kind of move that penny away a little bit at a time. And it becomes eventually just a penny. So I would do this exercise when I would be having a hard time. I'd take the penny and put it in front of my eye. And I'd think, okay, call your sponsor. Okay, we moved it a little bit. Okay, go take a contrary action to how you feel. Okay, we moved it another bit, you know. And eventually it just became a penny, you know. And I that's how simple I needed it. I needed a sponsor louder than my head that said, you know, you go to a meeting every day, you shake hands with the new people, you don't have much to share yet, but you're getting there. You know, you took step one, step two, and now we're going to do three, you know. And three was exciting for her, and it was, I didn't feel a thing. Not a thing. And she hugged me and wouldn't stop hugging me after we got up from our knees, and she just put my face in her, you know, her face in my bosom, and she just hugged me, and I just thought, I'm going to have to smack her to get her off me right now. And I've done a lot of third steps with people I sponsor, and I love the feeling I get. It's renewing. It just burns it a little brighter. But, you know, when you're new, it's like, don't touch me. I hate being touched. And so, you know, she's like, oh, and I started to feel like I loved her. And I knew, okay, Janet, I think I love you and I'm gay, is what I said, you know. And she said, let's not make any major decisions in our first year. So, and we did, we did the fourth and fifth together. And I swear to God, I was going to kill her if she breathed anything of that. And we sat there on the beach, in Venice Beach, all night long, which is not a safe area, really. And so the Venice police kept coming by, and they'd walk over with their flashlights. And I had my, you know, my greatest story ever told, my book. I would hold it, and, you know, it was like, I said, what are you guys doing? Oh, we're just reading something. Oh, okay, you sure you're okay out here? Yeah, we're fine. You know, so then they come back an hour later. You sure you're okay out here? You know, and we'd laugh. And she told me parts of her story that were worse than mine, and we'd laugh. And I worked so hard to not do that step. I mean, I just fought it and fought it, and almost drank. I thought I better have my slip. I'm 11 months sober. I'm at the airport. I'm on my way to Vegas. I'm gonna go have my slip, but I better call her. You know, because she's louder than my head. I better call her. And I'll tell you, even to this day, I don't speed dial my sponsor. I dial my sponsor so I remember the phone number. Because if I'm panicked somewhere, I want to remember that phone number. I dial that number. So I dialed her from the airport, and I said, I'm off to Vegas, going to have my slip, but don't worry, I'll be back. And she said, fine. She said, fine. Fine. She said, be like my friend Stella. She wouldn't finish her inventory either. Well, that's a low blow. She said she went off and had her slip at 11 months of sobriety, and she burned up in a bed. Go have fun. Burned up in a bed. That's something I hadn't considered, you know. Now I'm considering it. It's crazy. And so I just wrote. I sat there at the coffee shop, and I was so mad at her. I'll show her. And she motivated me with just, I was going to prove her wrong. I'm going to be Miss AA and prove her wrong. I'm going to die. I called her up and said, I'm going to die. I have a brain tumor. I have this migraine. I'm going to die at work today. I'm a waitress. I hated waiting food. Oh, my God. I had to learn how to act right because people would say, how are you? And I'd tell them. You know, then they'd be depressed. They don't want to hear it. But I called her one morning, and I couldn't get out of bed. And she said, if you die at work, we're going to give you a great funeral. It's going to be more flowers than anybody's seen. You're going to have people say great things. But if you die at home in bed, there is no funeral. And she hung the phone up on me. So I just went to die at work that day. I'm going to show up and die at work, and she'll feel bad, you know. I mean, that's the way she motivated me. She was so good for me. And when I did that fifth step, finally, and I dropped her off, and the sun was coming up. And I had this, I was going to my car, which I had now, and insurance and registration all in the same name, which was really odd, but we were legal. I looked up at the sky and the sun was coming up, and somebody said something really corny in my head or in my heart. It said, oh, angels would live here. angels would live here. Who said that? You know, it was just like I had a moment of grace because I had, I guess, cleaned out enough stuff that there was just a moment of a pure thought. Angels would live here. It was like, ooh, I don't know if I'm going to like this new person coming out, you know. I want to be hard and tough. I don't want to be soft and mushy and care about you. Because I'm just here for a little while. Once it gets together, I'm gone. You know, I'm an out-of-here kind of girl. I mean, Janet had me literally hang on to the seat. Hang on to the seat. Because I had that, I'm going to run. I have to move. I have to stick my thumb out. I've got to go. You're getting too close to me. I don't know if I can do this. I got to go. And she'd say, hang on to the seat, just hang on to the seat. And a couple days later, she'd walk by, she'd go, you're not gripping the seat anymore, are you? No, I guess I'm not. She said, you came to believe. Oh, okay. She kind of started to have it make a little bit of sense for me. She was really, Janet sponsored me for 5 years. She was great. I don't know where she is today. I can't call her on my birthday and find her. She's not in Alcoholics Anonymous. She's alive, but I don't know. I don't know her quality of life. I can't find her to tell her thank you on my birthday every year. I try to find her. She gave me hardcore grade AA and show up no matter what. And I had some of the greatest teachers. A lady named June Ann was one of my first friends. She would drive me around because I couldn't talk in my first 3 months and I couldn't eat. And so she just drugged me along. People were just drugged me along. And June Ann had the cookie commitment, and I had my first cup washing commitment. They didn't let me dry because I guess they thought I'd break the cups, but I got to wash. You know, I was a washer. Plus, I couldn't talk yet, so just give me the sink, you know. And so she would drop me off. I didn't have a car yet. And then she would go get the cookies and come back to the meeting, and we would have a meeting. And one night she didn't come back with the cookies, and everybody's all upset because, you know, the heck with the literature. Where's the cookies? We want cookies. And, you know, that's a powerful commitment. So if you're looking for a commitment, get cookies. And then if someone makes you mad, you know, you don't have to buy their cookies for a little while, too. Just, oh, they were out at the store. You know, I did that for a while when I was cookie girl. I had a little power. It was good. I know Carl will never tell Clint this, but Clint really made me mad one night because he burned his hand on some coffee. I was moving the pot, and I actually burned him, and he yelled at me. And I thought, an old-timer yelling at me, what's their problem? I'm not going to buy his Fig Newtons for 6 months, you know? And Clint would come by and go, there's no Fig Newtons. I go, I know. I'm sure Carl will never tell him, but none of you will either, but... You know, Janann didn't come back with the cookies, and everybody was wondering where they were. And all of a sudden, an LAPD pulls out to the curb, and the secretary goes out to talk to the policeman. And the policeman, they're walking up the steps of this church, and we're hearing Janann's name talked about. So we kind of gather around. We find out what's going on, and the policeman says, well, this lady, Janann, I guess bought some cookies and then went back in and shoplifted some candy bars. They caught her. They called me. I have to take her in. She's in the car, but she made me promise to bring you these cookies on the way. Those are my teachers, you know. Those are my teachers. No matter what, your commitment's covered, you know. So Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a sense of purpose, a sense of wonder, a sense of responsibility, a sense of heart, a sense of soul, a sense of being in the world, being in my skin, living in the now, finding God. I find God, I seek God, I find God, I seek God. I mean, I kind of rub the garment, you know, I kind of get close to that other dimension, and then it moves, and that's great because it keeps me in the game, keeps me in the game. I'm a more kind of alcoholic, so I'm a more kind of Alcoholics Anonymous girl. You know, I need a lot of you to rub up against to be okay, and that's all right. I got to make amends to my dad. I got to go home. I got to say what I needed to say to my dad. My dad and I, it was not a big, warm-hearted deal. It was just, okay, glad you're fine. And he walked me down the aisle, and I got married at 2.5 years, and we locked eyes. And he went to an AA meeting. It was about this size, and then met all of you at, you know, that week of my wedding and bought the big book. And my second sponsor had me. I got a better job, made me start paying him back the money I owed him. And when I called him to ask him and tell him where I was, and I was making better money, and could he come up with a figure, he already had the figure. He had read that big book. He had run a calculator tape, and he gave me an amount which I thought was too high. you know, making it about me now again, right? So I called my sponsor, and she's laughing, and she said, you know, he's probably right, so why don't you see if he accepts your payment terms, which he did. And we started on this path of making financial amends. And having a sponsor louder than my head, this sponsor, Jenny, that sponsored me for 5 years, she said, you know, maybe you shouldn't just send that cold, hard cash in the envelope. Maybe you should put a note about your life with that check so your dad gets to know you. You know, she said, are you willing to grow through this? Are you willing to grow through this? She didn't say, are you willing to have a brand new, innocent relationship with your father? Because I would have said, there's no way. Are you willing to have a healed relationship with your father? I was going to say, there's no way. But she said, are you willing to grow through this? And I said, okay, I can grow through this. You take the time to walk me through your experience, I'll walk with you. Show me. And so my dad got a check and a note for 4 3/4 years, on time every month, because I'm the only example maybe he'll ever see of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my dad called me and said, Merry Christmas, Sharon. I don't want your money anymore, but don't stop sending me your notes. And so I got to grow through that. I got to have, as the years went on, a healed relationship with my dad. I got to have the innocence come back. Never thought that was possible, ever. I got to have a relationship with my dad like I love with that little girl with the accordion. I got to have it. You know, and if you're sitting on anything like that, go for it. Talk to your sponsor and go for it. Don't sit on it. My dad was killed in 99. And he was gone in a second. And we were good. We were really good. And I got to play him an accordion number at his wake. And that marriage didn't work out. I had a little boy. Susan babysat Wesley so much. He's 22. He's not a little boy anymore. He's a young man, and he's part of the force for good in the world. And when that marriage was over, it was painful, and I ended up with a new sponsor, and a man named Clancy became my sponsor because I needed someone louder than my head. I was in pain. I mean, he had the newcomer in the room, pregnant and married in that order, and I was like insane because I'm a Leo. I'm a loyal Leo. If we're not done, I'm hanging on your leg as you're dragging me out the door, not till we're done, you know. I marry for life. I looked at my friend Vince, and I said, doesn't he understand I marry for life? And he said, Vince gave me some freedom. He looked at me, and he said, don't ever lose that quality. And people in Alcoholics Anonymous watched me hurt for that year, but they stuck by me, sometimes at a distance, because I wasn't very nice. And I got a better job so I could support my son, and life went on, and I went through the new door finally. That hallway was 1 year, 1 month, and about 19 days, but who's counting? But I was just in a hallway, you know. I didn't drink, I didn't go away, I stayed here, I wasn't real graceful about it, and I had to grow right in front of you in pain a lot of times. But it was so worth it because I really got rocketed, and I had no idea I was going to get rocketed. I had no idea. I just would never look back. I had no idea that my life ahead, the playing field that I was going to walk into, the view was more beautiful than I could ever think, and of course more beautiful than the one I left behind because I grew up a little bit. I stayed with you, and I just got married a year ago, and I'm amazed that we're going to be married a year next weekend. And we eloped. It was a lot of fun. Casey, you'll have him here next month, my husband. And he's 24 and a half years sober, and once you hear him talk, you'll know why we're together. And it takes a lot of meditation and prayer in our lives, but we do really well together. We dated a long time. I didn't want to tell you how long, but we didn't live together. We dated. We did Alcoholics Anonymous. We worked. I sponsor people. He sponsors people. I was being a mom, rescuing animals, making my amends to the animal kingdom, finding them homes. A lot of things present themselves. The carnival, oh my God, how do you make amends for the carnival? When my son got kicked out of kindergarten, you know, I thought, boy, he's five and we're having trouble. He's a great kid, but I guess he had it early. I stayed on him. And being a single mom of a boy in L.A., you stay on him. You watch everything. And he's just part of the force for good today, which I'm so happy about. But guess what they have at this Catholic school of this nun I sponsor? I know that's another long story. And she was principal of a school, and I got to go back, and I got to make amends to the Catholic Church. I can come and go anywhere because God is in my heart. God is in my spirit. God is in my actions. God is in this room. And so they have this carnival that I worked from kindergarten till he graduated from eighth grade. Every year I worked that carnival for those nuns. Whatever you want, I was there to do whatever they wanted. And by the time my son graduated from that school in eighth grade, I thought, it's over. It felt right. It felt good. So the universe presents itself if it's on your list. And every morning I get to, you know, I get to sit and I get to have my meditation. And I get to have my animals come sit with me. I just lost one of my 18-year-old cats. That was my sweetie. And she's meditated with me every single morning. And the lap's been empty now for about 2.5 weeks. And one of the other cats is going, I think there's an empty lap. So he's starting to kind of find my lap. But I take my time in the morning. I take my time in the morning because I go out into a world I still don't understand. I try to be part of the force for good. I'm a good daughter to my mother. I'm a good sister. I'm a good sponsor. I'm a good sponsee. I'm a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous on most days. And when you're not looking, I do it too because I feel right about it in my heart because I feel like God's kid today. I never thought that would happen. Tip of my head to tip of my toes, I feel like God's kid today. And I am one of those takers in life, and you've taken who I am, and we have rearranged me, and we have opened me up, and we have allowed the spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous to live in my life and to be a link in the chain and to burn my fire bright. And if you need a log and want to burn your fire bright, come get it. I want to thank you for having me tonight. My job is to just become half the person my dog thinks I am. Thanks a lot.